Omaha. We're going to do it this time. I promise you. Last time we got our flights canceled. This time we're taking a straight shot. I'll be there Friday, March 29th and Saturday, March 30th. Columbus, Ohio. I'm fired up to head your way. Never been there. My first time coming to your beautiful city. I'll be there Friday, April 12th and Saturday, April 13th. Los Angeles. I'm excited to announce that I'm part of the Netflix Is a Joke Festival. I have my own show Sunday, May 12th at the Bourbon Room. You guys ask me, how come you're not on Netflix? Well, here's a chance to sell this thing out and show them why I should be. Get your tickets now. Don't wait. All tickets available at RyanSickler.com.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to the Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Nightpan Studios. I'm Ryan Sickler, RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all your social media. And I'm going to start this episode like I start them all by saying thank you. Thank you for supporting this show. Thank you for supporting anything I do. It's genuinely appreciated. You guys, I love my job. All right. And if you got to have more of this show, then you got to check out the Patreon. It's called The Honeydew with Y'all. And it's this show with y'all. And I keep telling you, y'all have the craziest stories I've ever heard in my life. And if you just want to check out a sample, go listen to the episodes I do right here on The Honeydew with Josh Wolf, where we highlight like 10 of our favorite episodes. We've done two or three of those now. Check those out. I promise you, it'll blow your mind. All right. And thank you for supporting The Way Back. I genuinely appreciate it. It's going great. I love this show. All the guests you're seeing here, we're trying to get on there as well. Have fun with them. So go subscribe to that. You know what to do to help it out. Rate it, review it. Check out the audio feed as well. It does exist. All right. And come see me on tour. If I'm in your town, when you're around, tickets are available at RyanSickler.com. All right. That's it. You guys know what we do here. We highlight the lowlights. And I always say these are the stories behind the storytellers. And I am very excited to have this guest on today. First time here on The Honeydew. Please welcome Carrot Top.
Hey,
welcome to the Honeydew.
Buddy? What's up, buddy? Thanks for having me on.
Dude, thank you for
doing it. I have a lot of low lights, by the way. That's great.
that's good. Geez, yeah, because
I'm serious.
All right, before we get into it, please.
I'm Carrot Top. I'm full of low lights.
Yeah, you can't be full of highlights, bro. Even that hat's. Yeah. Even the hat's got a little. The rainbow's falling off.
Oh yeah, I know. It's like it's typical. I made it. It's falling apart. That's all you can tell if I made it. It's falling apart.
Promote everything you'd like, please.
Well, you know what? I'm lucky to have the show in Las Vegas at the Luxor. I've had. Is there 18th year? We'll be there.
That's crazy.
I know, it's unreal. We'll be there another 6 years.
It can vote
at
now.
The Luxor, so I'll be dead by the time I'm done at the Luxor.
But
18 years, yeah. And and then we have some road shows coming up, I believe, in somewhere like Indio, Palm Springs, something like that coming up in March. I can look it up on my website, carrottop.com.
All right.
Yeah, other than that, working.
Yeah, dude. Well, I'm so stoked to have you here.
Thank you.
We'll get into a few things. I was talking to you before we started, but your real name is Scott Thompson, for those people who don't know that. And I said to you, you know, who came first, and would have had to change your name because of Scott Thompson and Kids in the Hall anyway. But you became, and then I told you, you know, I researched my guests enough, but I also know from the shit I see about myself online, like, look, I'm not tall. But I'm not 5'6".
Right.
I'm not motherfucking 5'6".
Right.
So I know, you know, take shit for what it's worth. But I said I saw that a coach.
Yeah,
gave
I don't
you
know where
nickname.
That came from. Yeah. My swimming coach named me that because that's definitely not what happened. I was always had been called other things worse than that, and I was in my dorm room. I just started to. I wasn't even a comedian yet. I wanted to be a comedian, so I thought I got to draw a logo, right? So I had this. I drew a logo. My friend says, "What's that?" I said, "It's a logo for what?" And I said, "Like for one of my classes." And I said, "No, it's for my act. You know, my when I become a comedian, that's my logo." And he's like, "You don't have any. You don't have a joke." So I said, "I know, but I have a logo. That's more importantly." So I got that out of the way.
I'm thinking the same thing.
Thought of it was a brand. I was a marketing major, so I kept saying it's got to be a brand. It can't be Scott Thompson because there's already Scott Thompson Kids in the Hall. Plus, that's not a show busy name to me. So I thought, I want to be a name like when you're walking down, you know, like Vegas, you just see it and it stands out. And I said, Carrot Top. I don't know how it just hit me, Carrot Top. So I drew this logo with a carrot and a thing holding a microphone, and there, Carrot Top. It was a blessing and a curse, by the way, Ryan.
You know? I hear you on that.
I mean, you know, but first it's impressive. I did it, and then someone says Carrot Top. I'm like, what have I done? I might have called myself Carrot Top. I should have gone with Queen Latifah. It was still available. It was still available. It was still available.
This is a wild parallel, but Deion Sanders did the same thing with Primetime. He was in his college dorm, was like, okay, I'm not a player, I'm a brand.
Right.
And went that direction first.
Yeah.
So that's great. That's great.
And then, well, it was kind of really honestly how it started with me with the when the name came out too first, when you start doing clubs as you did, you'd get to the club and there'd be 25, 30 comics a night. So when I went up there with my trunk, at first I didn't think of this. My little prop trunk, it was just a trunk with like a rainbow on it or something. And I was pulling all my props out and I went down. Then one night I'm back there watching. After I was done, my prop trunk was left open. And I said to myself, why do I not put Carrot Top in the lid of that? So the whole time they're watching me, it's an ad. So I put Carrot Top in the lid of the trunk. And then it was like, you know, the brand started and people would come up after the show and say, Carrot Top. Or who did you see? This Carrot Top guy was, because they saw it. It was marketing. It was in their head. So I did, in a sense, get to use some of my marketing skills with that, because people make fun of you in marketing and then you're in comedy. I still to this day use marketing, and even like with the trunk lid, that's in the name, the brand, the whole thing.
It's smart. It's so smart. Yeah. You should be putting it up
right behind you. Yeah.
So again, I researched you, and the only thing I really sort of found about your upbringing was your dad worked for NASA,
yes.
Your brother's Air Force F-16 pilot, it said.
Yeah.
All right. But I saw nothing about your mom or anything. So can we talk about, like, where are you from originally?
My mom's in prison. We don't talk about my mom much.
My
mom was like a sweet.
There's a lot of people whose moms are in prison.
A lot of times, like, are you kidding? No, I'm not kidding. She is. Oh, Jesus. No, she is in prison. My mom is furthest from that. She owned a tennis shop. So my dad working in NASA, my mom owned a tennis shop. She was definitely kind of literally the yin yang. I got my father's creativity side, being an engineer, and where I build all my props. And then I got my mom's personality, where I've got the thing. So it really did blend well. My brother, I don't know. He was just F-16 fight jitter pilot. And I'm gluing dildos and walkers together and gluing hats
Strategically, though.
There's a way to do it. You can try to build your own, but I know how to do it.
You can take that NASA background and do different shit with it, dude.
But learn, yeah.
So your dad, what was he doing for NASA? Is he still with NASA?
No, he's not. He's now retired. He's moved on to heaven. But when he worked there, he was in logistics. And so what he did, I thought was kind of cool. He taught the astronauts how to drive on the moon, the lunar module.
Get the fuck out of here. How did he learn how to do that?
Did you go to the moon to learn this? I mean, right. And he said, that's a great question, son. You're smart. So I guess they just taught. No one knew. That's what was interesting. They had to teach what they would think might happen on the moon and how to drive if there was just conditions and how they, you know, practice and rehearse for all that. And after the moon landing, then he moved into shuttle. And at the shuttle thing,
Was he there for the original moon landing, the first?
Yeah, he was.
Was he?
Yeah.
The one that people think didn't happen?
It wasn't. Yeah. It's too bad my dad wasn't here and ask him about that. I'm going to see someone get riled up. My dad would be fine. He'd be fucking.
I think I taught people how to drive on the moon.
I think I was there.
Yeah. Hold on. Your dad taught Neil Armstrong how to drive a vehicle for the moon?
Yeah.
Dude, that's crazy.
Yeah, I know. And as a kid, I never really, you know, thought, I didn't think anything. We're kids. I just thought, I don't want to go to another launch. You know what I mean? I want to watch Gilligan's Island. So we'd go, you know, watch the launch. And I think I was 13. My dad, we were going to see the shuttle launch. And we're out there at the Cape. And there's a tent for beer and soda and chips and stuff. And there's a tent for beer. So my dad says, what do you want? I said, I don't know, just a Coke and a hot dog. And my dad says, well, I'm not waiting in that line. You're having a beer. I said,
how old are you?
13. So yeah. I said, all right, don't tell your mom, but just have a beer. So he gets the beer and he's like, try it. And I'm like, you don't like it? I said, it's okay. He's like, do you want me to get you? I said, no, I'm fine. I'll rough through it. So I drank my first beer and I think I saw three launches. And then we got home. My mom's like, how was the launch? I said, oh my God, I got drunk. Dad got me a beer. And I'm like, Jesus, what? So yeah.
Were you there for Challenger?
Yes, I was. Well, I was there. I know exactly where I was. I was in my car. I was a courier when I was doing college when I just first started doing comedy. I drove bank reports to banks and back. So that's why I was listening to every day on the radio this comedy show, and I would listen to it. So I was on the highway, and when it happened, and we didn't have cell phones, so I pulled over and got a payphone and called my dad at work, and I remember my dad picking up.
Are you seeing that in the sky, though? You're in Florida, right?
Oh, no, we saw it.
Yeah.
Well, what happened was they said, like, this is going to happen any second, so we all pulled over.
Oh, I see. You're all watching the law.
And then I saw it, and I was like, that didn't look good. And then everyone on the news was speculating something, so I said, well, I got the first hand knowledge. I'll just call my father right to his office. And it didn't pick up at first. And then I went and drove a little bit further, and I got back to school, and I called him again. And then he picked up, and I said, I can't talk, son. I said, what's going on? He says, well, the shuttle blew up. And I just never forget what the world was going through. But knowing people that I knew there, like I had met some of those astronauts, and I met.
You did.
Yeah. And my father, of course, knew them like they were best of friends. I mean, like Gus Grissom days. He used to take Gus Grissom's Corvette and drive these astronauts. They all had Corvettes or usually Corvettes. That was like the car the astronauts drove. And they have them in Houston. And then they go to Florida. They wouldn't. My dad would drive their cars just for fun. He said, I'll take.
Like a cannonball
Neil
run?
Armstrong. Like a cannonball run. Yeah. And my dad would take one of the astronauts' cars back home. And so we pulled into my driveway. And I'm like, what the? It's Neil Armstrong's Corvette. Don't touch it. Yeah. So it was unreal.
Your poor dad had to be also like, listen, guys, I teach him how to drive. Not
yeah.
fly,
I mean, right. You know, like, I teach him how to drive in the moon. I think I can teach him how to drive a Corvette.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's wild.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? You don't think about it as a kid. So and then you tell them, hey, I'm going to get into comedy. They're like, what?
I remember I was in art. We had home ec. I don't even think they teach that in school anymore. I'm in there learning how to make pizza English muffins, and we're watching it. We stopped class. Wow. You know, everybody's watching. And then also the teachers are freaking out because was it Krista or Christine McAuliffe?
Krista McAuliffe.
She was McAuliffe. A teacher.
Right.
So that was one of theirs. You know what I mean? So I remember the teachers running in the room going, are you – you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, not even necessarily worrying about us for a second, but like that was this. Us.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, still get chills. Still from
home
that.
From that. Yep.
So, what were your parents always? Were they together the whole time?
No, they split when I was about probably after the first beer, 13 years old.
Yeah, that was
when he found out. My dad gave me a beer. They split. So yeah, about 13 years old, they moved apart and they divorced and separated. But you know, they were always cordial and fun to each other. And
who did you go with?
I was with my I split time with both. My mom and then my dad didn't live that far down, so I started going to college, community college at first. I'd stay back and forth with him for that first year, and then I just decided I think I want to go to like college and get out of Cocoa. My dad's like, you're gonna work at NASA, and I'm like.
He was set on you doing that?
Well, yeah, but I said, I do a thing in the show about it. I said, I want you to be a comic, he says, you do know that's probably never going to happen. And I tell the crowd, and it's dead silent. I said, he was probably right. It's true, but what a dick. Why would you say that? So then I asked my dad, well, what do you want me to be when I get older? And he says, I want you to be an engineer like your father and work at NASA and train astronauts like I did. And I call back to you, you do know that's probably never going to happen. Like, I'm the dumb son. The F-16 guy's over there.
But also the odds, I feel like, of both jobs might be pretty parallel to not necessarily coming to fruition.
Yeah, right. I think both are cool jobs too. Like being an F-16 fighter jet pilot in the Air Force Academy is pretty darn cool. But then my brother thinks being a stand-up comedian, on, you know, especially later on, you know, on TV and whatnot, it's pretty cool too. So it's we both have fun professions, and then we look at each other like – You know what you're doing. I kind of know what I'm doing. He knows what he's doing. But
yeah, we can make a mistake,
right?
Your dad
I always say that. I said, I have a bad show. There's always another show. You have a bad landing. You don't have another bad landing. So there's a lot more pressure to be in positions than we are. I think it's people give us so much praise, but it's like it's okay. We can rebound after a bad show.
So where do you? where do you fit in? Like, what do you like growing up? Are you a good student? Are you fucking around? Are you getting in trouble? Or are you pretty
definitely
straight and
not
narrow?
Fucking around. I was really quiet to myself. Not a good student. So I was always just, I probably haven't never been checked, but like ADD or whatever they call.
So you were the quiet bad student,
no,
not
quite
the
good,
acting
quite
out
good.
One.
Never. I would, if I ever did,
you were a good student, but say, didn't do well up, with grades. I'm
right,
saying
bad grades, gotcha. And I, but I wasn't acting
disrespectful
or even like the class clown. I wasn't. I would have a joke ready or a one line.
Would you
with the teacher? But it was always just the one line. I wouldn't stand up and run around the crowd and try to. I just would like, you know, add a quip, and everyone would always go, "That's Scott. That's funny." You know.
Do you remember one that still stands out from like middle school where you're like, "Fuck yeah, I got that, was good," or even the teacher was like, "Man, that shit's funny."
I remember one where we were talking about going to having a fire. I said, "What did you guys do on the weekends?" Or something. I said, "Well, my friends and I went and had a campfire on the beach, and the police came and they made us leave." And I asked the policeman, "Why couldn't we stay on the beach and have our fire?" And he says, "Because it's too dangerous." And I said, we're sitting next to two things that put fires out. We have water and sand. It can't be the more safest place to put a fire." And she just looked at me. She goes, "That's very smart of you." And I said, "Well, that's what I said to the cop. He didn't find it that funny." He said, "Take it in the woods." And I'm like, "Well, that's good. Take it in the woods. Take it in the woods where it's, you know,
safe."
Yeah. So that's kind of when my brain would think like, well, am I missing something of the cleverness? And so, you know, it's observational. It's also true. You know, it's even like now when I do my Trump thing, it's always what makes the Trump thing fun is I'm not making fun of Trump. I'm making fun of just his voice or his thing, his manner. Like, we didn't have bottles. We never had bottles before, but I made bottles, but microphones weren't here. There was no microphones. People just yelled at each other. I made mics. You're like, so it's that. It's kind of like, that's funny to me because you're making absurdity of everything about not just, you know, not liking the guy. And if the voice, if you can get close, mine's so bad that it's good. You just gotta sit down lower though in the seat. But I'm sure every comic does a Trump, but it makes it fun just because I think they're laughing at the voice, and I'm making fun of the guy
or his politics.
Right.
Just making
right. I'm making fun because he'll say that. "I'm the best thing I've ever done here. I made this," you know. That's Trump of the cold. I think I have a cold today.
So are you getting bullied? Are you a kid that's getting – you're obviously different. You got red hair. You're a pale kid that's quiet.
It's such an interesting word, the bullying, because
– I'm – okay.
Oh, no, I'm saying it's because people – that's the word people use. And I used to get picked on, I guess would be called bullying. But I don't remember ever, and thank God, I was never picked on like in a violent way where I was – you know, beaten up at the bus stop or they would make fun of me verbally because I weighed 100 pounds. I had freckles, red hair, and I live in a beach. So, you know, so like, and your brother's like the blonde, my brother's blonde.
You're
and
the
like
only one with red 6'2". Hair?
So I used to say before I said, "No, you know, my adopted life," and they would say, "Oh, you really are adopted?" I said, "Well, I feel like I am. I'm, you know," they would say, "Who has the red hair in the family?" And I say, "We have an Irish setter." That was the only thing I could come up with, but I don't think I was picked on, like bullied as much as I was just, I was
never
the
physically
guy that stood,
harmed.
No, right. So I stood out like a sort of thing. Even like today, I mean, I walked through an airport. I definitely look like, you know, someone different than a normal person. So when young people do it like that with bullying, I see it. I have a little 4-year-old goddaughter that you know, that every time I say, just yesterday I said, "Oh my God, that was so funny." She gets so angry if I say she's funny. And I think what's happening is someone at school, that's how they make fun of someone. It's, "Oh, you're like funny looking, you're funny." I said, no. If they, you know, if someone says you're funny, they're complimenting you, like, "You're funny, you made us laugh." She goes, "No, I don't be funny. I don't want to be funny." I'm like, okay. I don't think she quite. So that could be something that happens, you know, banter-wise with kids. But yes, I was definitely picked on. Thank God my brother was a senior. I was a freshman, so everyone knew my brother. He was a swimmer, and he was, like I said, it was Garrett. Everyone knew him. So I was Garrett's little brother. So all of his friends would always pick me up. I weighed 100 pounds, and I got to be part of the cool team because I was Garrett's brother. So then when my brother left, and I was just the only one there, then, you know, I had to fend for myself, and that's when I started doing – trying to be more funny and try to get into comedy not get into stand-up comedy, just get into being funny with more quips with people and observational things. And then it started in college with the actual of coming up with, I think I'm going to be a stand-up comic, which is fun looking back, right? Even you, like, it's just a weird thing to, and you dive into something they know nothing about. Like nothing. I said, I would watch George Carlin and watch Phyllis Diller and everyone on the Tonight Shows.
Didn't know anyone who did it. I didn't even know what a manager and agent was. I thought we were just getting up, making people laugh at first. Then I'm like, oh shit, now we got to do this.
That's absolutely the truth. I was the worst with that with comedy because I would do gigs and I wouldn't even pick up my check because I was not doing it for the money. I was just couldn't believe I was doing it. I would leave and they say, you didn't pick up your check. And I'm like, all right. And other comics are like, that's like the first thing I did before I went on stage. I'm like, I know I wasn't thinking about my getting paid. I was just thinking about the show and thinking about getting to the next gig. And, you know, I had just enough money, you know, to get gas and a beer. I mean, literally nothing. And then I didn't think about that. It was just the idea of doing it and then not doing it. I went for a phase where I couldn't get gigs anymore, so I just quit.
Did you?
Yeah, and I went back to Florida, and I was shucking oysters at this bar. And there's a jukebox back there, and I'm dancing around like Mick Jagger and Aerosmith and Michael Jackson, which is now at the end of my show. It's weird. That's where this whole thing at the end of my show came from when I was 17, 18 years old. And I turned it into this whole rock montage thing. But Miss Shuck on Oysters, and these two couples came in. And I'm doing my, you know, stupid shit, shucking the oysters, and I'm like Mick Jagger, and I'm cutting up napkins and going, you know, excuse me, and the flipping feathers come out. Every stupid bar gag you could possibly come up with. And they're laughing, and they look at me, and they're like, you have a twin somewhere. And I said, God forbid, you know, I have a twin. Jesus, jump now. He says, no, they're all like, no, like, not funny. Like you've been to Tampa? I said, been to Tampa. Oh, you have a twin. What's the guy's? He does comedy. We saw him. He's so funny. And the guy said, Carrot Top. And he said, I said, Carrot Top. And I go, Carrot Top? They go, yeah, you should look this guy up. He's fun. He's the funniest guy I've ever seen. He has all these things and gags.
Get the fuck out.
Yeah. And I went, oh, wow, cool. That's cool. Carrot Top, huh? I'll check that out. And I went to my manager that night and I said, I might have to go back in to do what I used to do before, so I'm not going to leave, but I'll give you 2 weeks' notice. And he says, where are you doing? I said, you know, comedy. And he said, you were doing comedy? I said, yeah, I quit. He says, oh, we're going to do it again. So I said, yeah, I think. So I called my buddy who booked gigs, and I said, you don't happen to have a gig, anything? I haven't done comedy in like 2 years, so I don't know if you haven't, you know. He said, I have New Year's Eve and Fort Myers. I'm like, well, my first show back is not going to be New Year's Eve in a 500-seat comedy club. No way. It's called Dr. Al's Comedy. So I said, no. You need like a bar, a little shithole gig I can do? And he said, no, take this one. I said, Bob, I haven't done comedy. And like, he's like, you're Carrot Top, for fuck's sake. You got it. And I said, okay. And I bit the bullet and I went down there. And my mother, of all people, got wind of it. And she said, I'm going to come watch you with Dolores.
Was like, this the first time she'd come
ever,
to see you?
Yeah. Even in, I've never seen
Dolores before. Is such an old lady's name. No, that was Dolores. My grandma's.
Oh, yeah. Dolores. Yes. So mom and Dolores, Donna and Dolores came.
such an old lady.
It'll be a good TV show, lady. Donna and Dolores, like right after Cagney and Lacey.
Oh, shit.
So they came into the show. And as you know, if you know, but New Year's Eve shows, me and people, it was anything but a crowd listening and put sure they were just throwing whistles and boo and blinging them, right? Mm-hmm. So it was perfect. I got up there, I did my time that I do, and at the end they were just shooting corks off, and the manager was like, that was great, you killed it. I said, I didn't even do any my act. He said, no, you've worked the crowd, let them do. They were shooting corks through my fucking hands. So I went back, did, and then that's, you know, the ends, then here I am.
Did Donna and Dolores love
Donna
it?
Donna and Dolores. Yeah, they loved it. My mom to this day will still remember. You remember that night I was there? I said, yes, of course I remember that. My father never got to see me perform until the very end.
He did get to, though.
He did. And then he became a huge fan, but my dad was not into me.
This is what I wanted to ask you. This is a NASA man. Your brother's going in the Air Force. Mom's got her tennis thing going. Were your parents supportive at first?
I wouldn't say they weren't supportive, but they were not into it.
Both of them.
My mom was just saying, you know, if you can do it, you're free to do it. My dad was like, bullshit. You're not going, forget doing comedy. You're not going out of Cocoa, Florida. You're going to stay and work at the Space Center. And I kept saying, Dad, you have to be smart to work at the Space Center. I got to break it to you. Now, being a comic, you have to be smart too, but I was just being stupid.
I was going
to
say, you're obviously wise, and it's a different smart.
Right. It's a totally different smart. It is. It's a totally different smart. So I go and I just start pursuing it, and I end up doing it, but, and you know, just enough to buy beer and stuff. So I had a gig, one or two gigs outside of, you know, one in North Florida and one like even further. I'd never been out of state. I think it was like on the edge of Georgia, and I was so nervous. I'd never driven myself out of the state of Florida before in my life. And here I am in my car. There's no cell phones. I don't know how to get to. I have a map, you know, an actual map. So I go and I start doing these things. And finally I said to my dad, you know, you want to come see one of my shows? And he was like, I don't even know exactly. What do you do? We do stand up. What does that mean? I said, stand up comedy. It's jokes. So he's like, all right. So he comes to one of the shows. And it was just one of those moments in your life that you see your father just like, who the fuck are you? Because I was always so quiet, I never did anything, and all of a sudden I'm on stage and I'm doing this.
Yeah, you've got I'm that doing this whole thing, and everything.
But yeah. I have an act and an energy and a thing. And my dad's like, "This is fucking great!" Like he was so proud of me. And then from that point on, he, you know, he called himself Pop Top. You know, he became. Pop Top. And now my brother Garrett, I call him Garrett Top. But my dad started it all with Pop Top.
Pop Top. Yeah, Pop Top. That's fucking hilarious. And,
but then he became a huge fan. I mean, he couldn't believe he still, before he died, he still could say, I just don't know how the hell you did that. And came, I mean, I don't know. I'm proud of you, but I'm, you know, I just kind of did it too. I just did it.
There's not like an uncle in Vegas.
Yeah, I never really like, asked anybody. Right. Yeah. I mean, ever. I just kept doing it. And even when I got on TV, that was like the first time I wouldn't tell anybody that I was even doing. I just called one night and my dad and my mom and some people that I grew up with, and I said, "Hey, I'm on the Tonight Show tonight if you're around." And they're like, "You're on what show tonight?" I'm like, "The Tonight Show." And they're like I said, like NBC. And that was when it really struck her. You know, I'm standing on the little gold star, and it's like, you know, dun, 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 dun. That was, you know, for them and me. I mean, that was you're like, holy shit, I think I'm in show business. Like now I'm, you know, went from shrieking ushers to doing this.
The Honeydew is sponsored by BetterHelp. A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. You know, I'm a big believer in therapy. We talk about that mind muscle all the time. All right. It can be great for a lot of stuff. It's helped be the best version of yourself. It's not just for people who've experienced major trauma, all right? So if you're even thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/honeydew today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/honeydew. Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. You know, we keep it here at the studio. Liquid IV has been with us since, I want to say, day one. And they're still here, and that's thanks to you guys. You love Liquid IV. We love Liquid IV. They're so convenient. I'm bringing them out on tour. We got to keep healthy during these winter months, man. 1 stick plus 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. It's got 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. No artificial sweeteners. 8 vitamins and nutrients, plus non-GMO and free from gluten, dairy, and soy. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code HONEYDEW at checkout. That is 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code HONEYDEW at liquidiv.com. Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they forgot about? Between streaming services, fitness apps, and delivery services, it's never ending. A free trial starts to add up when you don't remember to cancel it on time. Thanks to Rocket Money, there's no more wasting money on forgotten subscriptions. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. With Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of my expenses. I can see all my subscriptions in one place, and if I see something I don't want, boom, Rocket Money can help me cancel it with a few taps. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lowering your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/honeydew. That's rocketmoney.com/honeydew. rocketmoney.com/honeydew. Now, let's get back to the dew.
Let me ask you a quick question. It goes so fast, though, right? So then you don't. Then another good 2 years, 3 years goes by. You're doing movies and you're doing TV, and then all of a sudden you're like, I never got a chance to absorb that moment. Really, it's like you know.
But that moment, if that couple doesn't come in and say that to you,
no,
who do knows? You think you go back?
I don't think. I don't know.
I mean, that had to happen.
I think that was unbelievably a kismet. I had to have. I don't know, and probably happened for a reason. Because you're right. I don't
it
think
definitely because
I
for
definitely
a
was not.
That's
I
you're saying. Give, that's what pushed
I
you right back.
In
right?
a way, I mean, I was done. I didn't even think about it ever again. And then when I did think about it and then do it, then I had that feeling back. And then I was like, okay, I think I'm going to try this more. And then I was just one day I was doing a club. It was a club in this barn. It was over, and I was packing up all my stuff, and people were coming up to the stage as I was putting my stuff away, and they said, "Why aren't you?" So I'm on a lot of TV shows. Comics run TV shows, and this couple says, "Why aren't you on TV?" And because it was a TV thing on after, I said, "I don't know. I don't know how to even get on TV." And then this guy's like, "Well, you should be on there." So I have this guy that wanted to be my manager. And I said, he said, "What a manager?" And I said, "Well, what would a manager do?" And he said, "Well, I'll help you do this, I'll do that." I said, "Will you get me on TV?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Okay, if you can get me on TV, we'll do it." So it wasn't that long later. It might have been 2-3 weeks. He said, "I think I got you on Comic Strip Live," which was huge. It was, you know, it was Fox. And I was filmed right in L.A. at the Jamie's Club there. And I go, and I'd never been in California. There's TVs, lights, just like this. It's an actual, I mean, I'm scared to death. And I remember just thinking to myself, I'm scared to death. Like, I'm going up, and it's TV people. And you know, everyone on two, quiet, you know. And I just, for some reason, I just took a deep breath and said, you know what? Just do it like you're doing, like you're at the club in Charlotte. It's nothing different except there's a camera guy there. So I went up and I just was like, yeah, I forgot there was cameras. And I just did my first joke was a Crime Watch, neighborhood Crime Watch sign that I stole. I said, this is how good our Crime Watch is. And I'm watching their fucking signs. And it killed. I mean, that first big laugh. And then I thought, oh, my God, fuck, this is killing it. And then I went in to do the rest of my whatever the hell
did
I had.
Did you do Wendy on that one?
I think I closed on that. Yeah, I said, yeah, shit, she's here. Yeah. That I did. Yeah, that was my, as I say in my show. I always say that was my free bird. People would yell out, "Do Wendy's." I'm like, fuck, all right. I put the clips. You know, and funny how that bit happened too. So, and it's just because, you know, like, because people always wonder, like, how a Rolling Stones, how they came up with whatever, right? Or I am always curious, like, how the fuck did this song, how did, you know, I'm friends with Queen. I said, how did you write, like, you know, Under Pressure. I want to know that. So the Wendy's bit was my classic, literally. I was at a Bahamas club, and I worked there for a whole week. And every, me and the opening act would go down to the lunch, and the only thing that was open was a Wendy's. And So we went to the same Wendy's every day. And every time we walked in there, the girls that worked in the Wendy's were always laughing at me. So I figured, okay, I'm goofy looking, da, da, da. And finally one day, they're all laughing again. I said, are you laughing? Americans are making you laugh. We come in here every day. And the girl's like, no, you. And she's like, you look like this. And I said, oh, I look like her? And they go, yeah. And my friend's like, dude. I said, oh, I look like the Wendy's girl. So I took my hair and I put them like this, and they all started laughing. So he said,
that's how that came about.
So that night I went down, that day we went to the drugstore. I bought these little clips and I just went on stage and I put my hair in pigtails like that. And I walked on and I said, yeah, you think you look bad? Look at this shit. And fucking Wendy's. I'm the Wendy's girl. And then it turned into a whole bit where you pull up and like, shit, she's here. Mm. And you clean up and, you know, they're looking at you like, yeah. So it turned into a whole like 20-minute routine. But yeah, it's how it happens. Just, you know, someone's laughing at me thinking, look, the Wendy's girl. I said, fuck, let's put that in the act.
Well, the thing I've always loved about you too is you have no problem shitting on yourself. You have no problem making fun of yourself or taking shot at yourself. Where does that start?
Well, I think that starts out when when I was being picked on as a kid. That was my way back.
You'd beat them to the punch before they could.
Yes,
the M&M, the whole fucking.
Literally, yeah. Before they could make fun of me, I've already done it. Like,
Better than they probably would have anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Always. I mean, I would always boom, and they'd be like, "Oh, I was just going to make fun of the fact that you're skinny and you have freckles." Exactly why. So it was always self-deprecating. And even comics that I had admired and watched, I always loved that. It's like two things. I like observational humor because I think people relate to it, right? When you say something, it's like they literally have done this or seen it before. They get it. I don't do a lot of politics. I do the observational and do like everyday kind of storytelling, some of the things that just happen to me that people, now that I've gotten older, people love to hear almost like what we're doing now. They want to hear like, well, how did you get into, how did you become Karen? Like, how did that happen? So yeah, it's self-deprecating, observational. And you, to be a comic, you can't not
we're
be
not
self-deprecating.
We're not the heroes.
Right. As long as you know that. So if there are people that don't do that, it doesn't work in comedy. If you go up there and you're just like the hot guy and the thing, it's not going to, I mean, you know, I, one of my favorite people in the world, God bless him, would make me laugh. Just he could read a phone book was Louis Anderson.
Yeah.
So Louis, you talk about self-deprecating, you know, big Louis, yeah. He'd come out and first thing he'd say, I was at the beach today. And that's a laugh alone was he's at the beach and everyone trying to push me back in the water. And two jokes and right away he's picking on himself and they're trying to push him in the water. How do you not love this guy? I mean, you just automatically love him. If he didn't come out and address anything, I think people would be like, does he not know he's fat? And you just love him. And it's like, you know, you got to come out and be the underdog. You know, you're not the even a success you get, you're still Carrot Top. You know, I do so many things in my act that I go back to say, like I said, you know, I get a lot of love. And I get a lot of shit. I said, but the shit, that's why I'm a comic. I mean, that's why I started doing comedy. I have to have thick skin. But there's things that make me laugh, things that people come up with about me that are the furthest that it just makes me laugh. Like the Carrot Top had a facelift. I said, would I not look better if I had a fucking facelift? And everybody laughs. And I go, no, seriously. Like I had a face. This is what if I had one, I would look good. Why would I, right? So then I do a picture of me. This is me 3 years ago. It's a picture of me on the big screen. And this is me now. And it's a picture of, you know, Caitlyn Jenner. I said, I'm the same.
I'm
the same fucking guy. And it gets the biggest. And then I say, right, so I'm picking on myself for looking like, you know, I'm saying that I look like a drag queen. And this is me now. I'm the same fucking guy. And then they laugh even harder. They're like, oh, that's great. He's got makeup on. He's good. Yeah. So it's always self. The whole show is self-deprecating. I mean, all the way through. It's even when I'm doing it, that my Trump I'm making fun of me, not him. Like, is my just so bad?
I have so many questions. All right, so you come from actually, it sounds like good parents. So you're not having to develop thick skin back then. You sort of developed that defense mechanism out in the real world and schools, things like that. When do you, or have you fully? Because I know some of us haven't. When do you finally accept this is who I am and I'm going to fucking be this person and run with it? When do you finally accept the rainbow hat you made?
Probably in a couple of weeks. I'm not quite ready.
I feel you on it.
But no, yeah. Well, you know what?
When did you get comfortable in your skin?
Probably when I turned 50.
For real?
Yep.
And you're how old now?
58.
58.
And my crew would probably agree. I don't know what it was. It was, I've been doing it all the time, doing it. And then, I don't know, I hit 50 and I got into this rhythm with not only myself, I got into a rhythm with the show and writing and trying and everything from doing sound checks before the show and rehearsing things new every night. And, and just kind of being me, like, I'm going to color my hair like fucking rainbow and I'm going to wear whatever, you know, I dress homeless. So no one asks for money. That's why I dress like this. If you look broke, they won't ask you for money. So, but
or
I,
anything, anything, anything,
or anything, not even directions, nothing. Or nothing. So if you don't want to get fucked with, dress like a bum. Dress like a bum. I'm telling you.
It you works. Should start your own clothing line.
Literally, it's kind of like, I should. It's kind of like that Larry David has said when he wears the Trump hat. It's a fucking brilliant. If you hadn't seen it, you probably have. It gets him out of all, when he wears, it's just the same
everything,
thing. Yeah. So it's brilliant piece of comedy. But yeah, there was 50, and I'm not quite sure why the actual age 50 was, but I just think, you know, middle right at my turning point, or I'm not going to live to be 100, but I was 50. I've had success. I just one day was like, I want to have fun. I want to be fun. And I just started having more, I started telling stories too on stage. Like I tell a lot of stories. Like people think the show and they see it and they go, wow, I like the whole storytelling.
Or they expect you just to do one.
They think it's just props.
The
they just think right. It's props. And the live show has evolved into this kind of a retrospective outline of how I got here. And so now that I have a fan base that's followed me, they listen at every, it's dead silent and they're listening at the end. They just love it. So I did the whole thing about, you know, comics that inspired me, you know, from Carlin to thing. And I told a story and then I show a clip of George Carlin mentioning me on a thing. And I said, this is the moment where you just, cause he said that was at the airport and they said, did you pack your own bags? And he goes, no, Carrot Top packed my fucking bags. Now I'm like, and the whole crowd goes nuts. And I'm like, you know, this, and I'm like that kind of shit. You know, I never just sat back and enjoyed it and shared it with the crowd. People send me shit, people making it. But I said, I should show that and say, that's, you know, studying him in my dorm when I was 12, 13 years old in Catholic school. And then, you know, he mentions me in a bit. I'm like, that's cool shit. That's cool. It's cool. But that's about the age, right around 50. I just said, fuck, I'm going to start having fun and dancing around stage more. And I kind of have my own stage, like look, and people like my crew that day said, I like your whole, everything is working right now. I like the whole, it's rock and roll mixed in with, it's fun. And I write more than I ever did. I don't know why.
Is that right?
Yeah. I writing in a sense too of not even if it works, it's just writing. And my problem is I don't own a computer. So I still write everything in notepads.
Do you?
Yeah. So, and I'm one of these guys that I don't sit down and write. I have many, many friends that say, I'm going to, what are you doing? They say, I'm going to write this morning or this afternoon or this weekend. And I'm like, wow, I've never done that. Never. I just write all day long. And then I try to jot it down. Or if I'm even in a conversation with someone, I'm like, fuck, like last night I was having a conversation at the hotel. I was like, oh, and this late guy was like, that was so funny. I'm thinking, that was. I got to remember how to put that in my somehow. But that's how it usually would happen. I'll ad lib it on stage and then try to redo it. Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely not a guy to sit down and say, I'm going to write a Trump joke or Dallas Cowboys. It just doesn't happen. It just all of a sudden hits me. 5 minutes before the show, I'm like, ah, that's it. I just made one, John Kerry. Now, this is a great joke. John Kerry just stepped down. Resigned.
I didn't even know he was up.
Right, I didn't either. And what's funny is I even say that in the show. I said, I do a Trump. So where's Johnny? Where's John? And it's John Kerry's night. Why no one tell me he was gone? And then I go, no, he did. He resigned. I have a big picture. I'm John. Do you remember John Kerry and the Iconic Lab? I said, he resigned. His wife owns Heinz Ketchup. Did you know that?
That's right.
And then the crowd's like, and I said, no, I'm not making this shit up. Now, as a comic, this is how you write a joke. His wife owns Heinz Ketchup. Could you imagine his wife trying to get him off at night? And it just fucking kills.
Makes me hate the Steelers more.
It just kills. Right. And then you do that and they go crazy. And then you add a song and like a white wedding. You just make it deeper and deeper. And then they're done with that. You said, you don't do, you just tap. So there's like five jokes in one. But that's one example of a new one that I was just watching the news. And I just, John Kerry's wife owns Heinz Ketchup. There's got to be a joke there.
Do you talk about your dad and your material at all?
Yeah. I talk about how he wanted me to, when he took me to see Gallagher.
And I took you to see Gallagher?
Yeah. I wanted to be a comedian. And I told him I wanted to be a comedian. It's a really great story in the show where I tell him, he takes me to it. And there was a line, you could meet him. So I said to my dad, oh, man. And my dad's like, what? You want to go meet him? I said, because I'm dying to be a comedian. Somebody said, all right, go meet Gallagher. I'm going to go to the car and get a beer. I said, okay.
I was going to say, he's getting the beer line. He's got it in the car.
Call back. I'm going to go get a beer. So you didn't know my daddy probably had two. So goes back to the beer line. Yeah. And then I do the whole meeting Gallagher. Blah, and then I said, I want to be you. And then my dad says, you know, it's never going to happen. Then he wants me to be a pilot. I said, you do this probably never happen. And then it's a really nice moment. And then I do the Gallagher montage of meeting him and telling him a joke. He said, yeah, you want to be a comedian, you have to have jokes. And I said, you do? And he said, yeah. I said, oh, well, that makes it harder. And he says, you don't have any jokes? I said, I have one.
You got a logo, bro.
I said, I have a look, but I haven't talked about it in the show, but I said, I have one. And I did do this in front of him.
And how old are you at this time?
14.
Oh, hell yeah.
So he said, what joke do you have? And it was in my pocket. Again, it was already a prop. So I pulled out a little, I do it in the show. I'm standing there and he said, you have to have one joke. And I said, well, I have one. And I take it out, and it's a little thing of Visine. So I said, they say Visine gets the red out, and then I pour it in my hair, and everybody laughs. And I said, and Gallagher's like, that's funny. And I said, then I go like that. He's like, fuck, you got two. But that punchline, oh, you got two, is like just the kicker. I said, oh, fuck. He goes, oh, fuck, you got one. I said, then I go like that. He's like, oh, fuck, you got two. And then I show a picture of him and I at 14. So it validates the story. Mm-hmm. And the thing, and the picture is priceless. I have this little red hair. I'm 14 years old, holding on to Gallagher. So it's a good story. And that's the kind of stuff I just started, as you asked me earlier, that kind of going into that. I started, but around that time, just started like incorporating things that people maybe want to know or hear about, as opposed to just the old Carrot Top, You have to kind of rebrand yourself. And people love something they don't expect. And people expect that's what they're going to expect. Oh, we need to hit the thing and all the crap. I said, yeah, no, I don't hit watermelons. That's Gallagher. I hit cantaloupe.
You do the trampoline. You do the trampoline?
Yeah. No, it's not me. Jesus.
You get shit like that, though, sometimes. Yeah. Older people.
Yeah. Well, I did it with Gallagher. I had a great – this is the best clip ever. I mean, literally ever. He came to my show like four nights in a row at the Luxor, and he sat on the side of the stage and just kind of stood there. And he never laughed once. He just kind of stood there and watched, which is probably normal for a comic, too. I don't know if I would probably laugh. I'm a little more of a laugher than
me, too. Obviously.
But he just studying me. And, he knows that he's my mentor. And I really honestly, when I first started, I'd go to ask questions and jokes. And so he comes up. I go home the third night. I go back and my manager calls me and he says, your buddy's here again. So I said, Gallagher? Yeah. He's here again? Yeah. Fuck. So we're driving in. I'm like, I have to think of an idea, right? So I'm like, oh, I have an idea. So I go to my warehouse. I said, don't we have a big hammer of some sort? And I don't know. I'm calling my guy. Is there like a hammer in here somewhere? He's like, I think there's like an old mallet thing that we used to. So anyway, we find this big hammer thing. It looks like it could be a Gallagher joke. And I get it. You have a stool down there, right? And yeah. I said, all right, let's go to the store and get a watermelon. So we go to Target. We get a watermelon. Thank God they had watermelons. I mean, that was just, you know, well, you have any watermelons? I think we have, it's not really season for what we have one or anyway, bringing this watermelon, the hammer, stool. So I get down there and I said, he doesn't know about this. So I said, Geller, I said, at the end, if you're cool with this, I have an idea. And the crowd will go apeshit. I'm going to reference the woman in the front row. Just randomly, I'll say to the woman, I hit the watermelon at the end. So just in case, you know, I could just to set it up. She's looking at me like, when are you going to hit the watermelon? I do it at the end. The wrong show. I don't hit the, you know, I make a joke. I hit cantaloupe, but I'll do it at the end. So I've set it up. And now he's over on the side of the wings and I'm on this side. So I go off and I, they have, you know, another, please hand another hand for carrot top. So I run out with the stool and the watermelon and I put it down on the stool and I go back with the hammer we had placed and I go to grab the hammer to hit it. And I told him I'm going to do something at the end. I want you to come out and like you take it and smash it or whatever. I don't see him over there. So I'm like, I guess he's not going to, he kept saying, I don't know what the bit is. I said, the bit is you come out and the crowd goes apeshit. It's Gallagher. They're going to go crazy. And I just talked about being Gallagher, but you're actually going to come out and you're going to hit the watermelon. It's fucking,
I got it.
I'm like there, boom, I'm ready to go. I don't see him. Like, I guess I'm going to do this myself. So I go, I look one more time over. He comes running out, grabs the watermelon, pushes me. It's all on video. He pushes me, I mean, hard, like three times, violently across the stage. I mean, violently enough where he's just being, I think, being funny. And then he takes the watermelon and he's like, runs off this side with it, right? And I come back out, another hand for Gallagher, my guy, and the crowd's going crazy. And I come backstage and he's like, why did we do that? What does that mean? I said, listen to the crowd right now. He goes, but what's the purpose of it? I said, to have fun. That did you not hear the crowd? How much love they fucking, they're losing their mind. They just saw you. And it was funny. He goes, what was funny about it? I said, because I was going to hit a watermelon and I'm just going to steal your act. And you come out and you take your act back. It's funny. In fact, what you did was funnier than what I was actually going to try to hit it. And he just never, he said, oh, well, don't ever show that to anybody. It's horrible. So I said, okay.
And then. But Gallagher 2's out there.
And then he died. Well, not anymore.
Well, Gallagher 2.
Not anymore. I used to have a joke, Gallagher 2, audience nothing.
That's good.
Yeah, but no more Gallagher 2. But then Gallagher, died. And I started showing that clip to people.
Look, obviously, I've never seen the clip because the whole time I'm thinking, man, right. Hell yeah.
It's funny.
He didn't have to do shit. Didn't have to sell a ticket. No, just come and do his fucking.
Yeah. And the crowd was losing their mind. They were just thought it was the best thing.
That's ever. What I thought you said was he's going to come grab it and he's going to do it. And then he act just, like, don't you fucking say this. I'm, you know.
Yeah, no.
Set it up at the top, but I know you think this is
what what he did was brilliant. It was actually funnier than him doing it probably because I really didn't want him to hit the watermelon because people would have lost their minds. But it worked out. It worked out good that he just grabbed it. But, you know.
Can I talk to you about your dad passing? Are you comfortable talking about that? Is it something you knew was coming? Was it unexpected?
Yeah, he was pretty unhealthy for most of his life. He smoked, you know, on a Vespa. You know, my dad would smoke all the time.
He'd ride a Vespa?
I had a scooter one time, and he went for a ride, and I said, are you smoking on the he came back on a jet ski with a cigarette, and I said, that's amazing. My dad was like, what? I said, you went on a jet ski with a cigarette. It's wet out there. So, yeah. Not a joke. So he wasn't in good health. And then finally, he just got down towards the end there. And, and that's when I started a lot of the storytelling. I think he would really appreciate it now because it's so, it's warm and it's fun. And it's kind of showing a battle between like anyone in the audience probably had that, not necessarily a battle, just had a struggle or a thing with their parents, especially about what they want to do, especially something dumb as being a stand-up comic or a rock star, you know, maybe a rock star. So, you know, and my dad also being the extreme NASA guy that was no-nonsense guy to a guy, you know, someone like me who's, you know, really honestly was like my dad except when I got on stage. I'm not. But, at least he got to see it. And like I said, Pop Top was he loved it. Yeah.
How old was he when he passed away?
He was young, 76. But, shit. Yeah, he smoked like, he had just bad health and just didn't take care of himself.
And your mom and dad were still cordial with each other, though?
Yeah. My mom is 83, and she's still.
Oh, your mom went after a younger man.
She's still rocking it. She's still rocking it. Really young. Good health. All her wits about her.
You know? Does she?
Yep.
When's the last time she saw you perform?
I just 2 weeks ago.
Does she live in Vegas?
Live in Vegas.
Oh, she does.
She's a stripper.
Good.
She's a stripper.
There's definitely a market for an 83-year-old stripper.
There is
days.
A market.
Something for everybody out there.
I mean, she's a good stripper, too.
Donna and Dolores.
Donna and Dolores. Coming up next, Donna and Dolores. Double D's. Yeah, right? The double D's that come out. Fuck, there it is. That's a show. It's a midnight show.
It's a midnight show. Oh, dude. This was great, man. Thank you for real.
Thank you
so much for coming on here and doing
this. Thanks for having me on. This was fun.
It's been great to get to hear your real story.
Yeah.
So first time guest here, I ask everybody, after everything we've talked about, advice they would give to their 16-year-old self, what would you say to 16-year-old Carrot Top or Scott Thompson at that point?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because I think I did most everything right. I don't go looking back and thinking. Yeah. There's one thing I probably, but again, it might not have helped. But if I could go back when I was starting out or thinking about problems, I started wanting to really honestly get into comedy older in college. But when I was in high school, I probably should have taken some theater classes, I think. Not that, I think I'm fine without it because my acting is amazing. But taking some theater classes and kind of being, but I don't know, maybe not doing that. Maybe that fact that I was a wrestler and I swam and I wasn't in theater. Maybe just that works. You know, I probably, this is the only thing I think. When I got into comedy, I lived in Charlotte, North Carolina, and that's where the hub of this guy owned like hundreds of comedy clubs. And so at the time, you know, I said, he said, manage you. And I said, well, you know, what can you get me? I'll get you on TV. And also I'll book you every night for the next, I mean, you literally will work every night for the next 5 years or 10 years. Guaranteed. We'll just go to my office and you're booked in Nashville, Knoxville, Raleigh for the next 5 years. So I was like, I mean, none of my friends could get gigs. I'm getting 5 guaranteed years of gigs. So I said,
is it really that many?
Oh yeah. No, I said, okay. And then I got into the college thing. And so I couldn't even play these things cause I was doing colleges. So I would do colleges after colleges. And then I'd do, the weekends I would try to do the clubs, but then go back and do colleges. And I didn't stop working for, I think 5 years, I never took a day off. I was workaholic and colleges and theaters and then slipping into Regis and Kathy Lee and a Tonight Show and do a movie. But the only thing that I think sometimes that even though I did all that work with the grassroots way around it, if I had gone to LA and I'd stayed here and kind of did my thing, who knows what, I said, no, I'm not going to do the LA thing. I've got my own thing. Who needs LA? I have Charlotte. Like, who says that? And a lot of my friends are like, you don't live in LA? You live in Charlotte? How does that work? I said, well, I just do all the same shit. I just fly to LA and do my TV stuff and go back to Charlotte. And do my shows on the road and go back to Charlotte. And he says, but if you stayed in LA, all the people, the thing, and people and opportunity, and people that you'd meet, just imagine. And I'm like, that maybe, but maybe not. Maybe by living out here and struggling and trying to do it like everybody else might have been something that probably would have discouraged me because I had so much success. It's almost like the old thing about being a big, shark in a little pond or a, that's what I was. I was the big shark in this little town. I was famous. I mean, you can't not book me. Or I can go to LA and be a little small fish and not get it. Maybe not even figure out a way to get it done. So in a sense, I think what I did was right. But that one part of me thinks if I'd stayed here and pursued it and hung around Hollywood, maybe that people would have been, but I don't think that was my doing. I think my doing was doing it. I didn't want to go with the improv.
Listen, that's great advice.
I didn't want to go to the improv and sit there and wait till midnight to do my little stupid prop trial. I said, I want to go do an hour and a half at Notre Dame. And so I would do that. You know, my friend's at the improv doing 5 minute spot and I'm doing an hour and a half at Notre Dame. I'm like,
and you're getting paid.
And you're getting paid, but it's also, I feel like I'm already, I'm, 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 I'm working in the big room. I don't want to go to the back to that. You know, I don't know. But so, yeah. And the only other advice that I get, well, I say advice that I give young, especially comics, because I get a lot of people naturally that walk up to me and say, I want to be a comedian. Do you have any advice? And I always say, and you said it earlier, yes, there's two things of advice. You have to find a voice on what you're going to do, because the voice is the most important. Not the voice, but what you're going to talk about. When they say your name, Ryan, what is going to be your shtick? What's going to be your delivery? What's going to be your energy? What's going to be your style? We're going to talk about politics. You're going to talk about current events. And that's not something you have to figure that out. So it takes time. So I say two things. Figure out where you can get a lot of time on stage, a lot of time. And the more time you get on stage, you'll finally figure out your voice. So those two things are the most important, the time, and then you find out what your shtick would mean. I've been doing this almost for 40 years next year, and I'm still, my voice is changing. My shit's changing now.
I'm good. I hear it. Yeah. Dude, thank you. Yeah. Please plug anything you would like again.
Thanks, bub. Yeah, really appreciate that. You're fun.
You're great,
dude. Yeah, we do some road shows coming up in December and March. Not many, because we did the Luxor. We're there every night. So we have the Luxor. We have 6 nights a week for the next 6 years. And then who knows? You know, that's what's fun about the show business. Who knows? Something could happen an hour from now that I may be doing something different. I'm in a couple of movies that are out now. There's one with Matt Rife called Don't Suck. It's kind of, the title's funny because I'm sure they've already said it sucks. It's called Don't Suck. And I thought, you know, if I was a writer, I'd say it's too late. You know, they set you up, right? Mm-hmm. Don't Suck. Well, that's too late. You
know. Well, thank you, man.
Yeah.
As always, Ryan Sickler on all your social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to y'all next week.